This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Young South Africans whose lives have been so affected by Nyaupe. And we're going to be looking at the pervasiveness of this drug, this cheap and deadly drug that has completely taken over our communities, our townships, our society, and has caused so much ravaging, right? So this conversation is going to be an exploration into the drug itself, the drug users, its peddlers. And we're going to be talking to individuals who work closely with those who are trying to get out of the drug use. They're trying to get clean. And of course, we're going to be highlighting a number of interventions to try help and curb the abuse of this drug. You guys will know that in Pretoria yesterday, which has been much of our conversations for the past couple of days, it was a scene of chaos, you know, as taxi operators violently protested against non-South African nationals who they've accused of peddling drugs. And the violence, of course, that erupted after the death of Ujabu Baloyi, who was a local taxi driver who was shot dead after he had tried to intervene and actually stop a peddler from selling drugs. All of this has kind of caused CUNI to try and cast a focus on Nyaupe as the drug itself and bring some enlightenment to our community. So without any further delay, let me welcome our two guests onto the show. Today we're going to be in conversation with Nation Nyoka, who is a journalist and writes frequently for New Frame. And we're also going to be in conversation with Angela McBride, who's the executive manager of the South African Network of People Who Use Drugs. A warm welcome to both my guests. Nation, hi, welcome to Power Lunch.
Hi, Ntokozo, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And Angela, hi, Angela, welcome to Power Lunch.
Hi, Ntokozo. I'm good. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Nation, I really want to start with you. You know, yesterday, one of our avid listeners, you know, he tweeted that, lest we forget that Nyaupe doesn't come to anyone, but people go to Nyaupe. Right? That was the tweet that he actually tweeted. And I challenged him on it because I felt that the process is probably a little bit more complicated than that. But after reading your article, I get the sense that maybe I may be wrong, you know, and maybe it really is that simple. You know, in your article, you open with the line, trauma is often the gateway drug that puts young South Africans on the path to Nyaupe addiction. And mm-hmm. And I wanted to hear from you, was that something that you discovered in your investigation? Really, it is these young who are hurt, who are traumatized, who are turning to the drug as a form of escape.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's very easy to look at drug consumption as some sort of, you know, monolithic sort of practice or addiction, but it definitely isn't. And I did discover throughout the course of this interview or doing various interviews with these young men that, you know, it definitely stems from trauma. Yeah. The first man that I mentioned is Wandile Mdlalose, and he definitely says that he started taking Nyaupe as a way of coping with some of the things that he had experienced in his life. You know, thinking that the drug would somehow, you know, plaster over those issues and present him with life as a more manicured sort of, you know, vision. But it definitely didn't transpire that way. His life didn't work as he assumed it would in terms of how the drug then affected him and the consequences of that drug consumption.
Mm. What is Nyaupe? And I ask that question, it sounds very simple, but I really want to understand, you know, the composition of the drug itself. And I wonder if you are able to answer this question, because it is such a highly addictive substance, you know, because for a lot of addicts who've been on the drug for years, they always claim that they never knew that by starting to smoke Nyaupe that they would actually end up being addicts.
100%. So Nyaupe is a low-grade form of heroin. It's often sold in a piece of plastic, which is called a tie. And when I say a low-grade form of heroin, I mean it in the sense that it's a powdery substance.
Okay.
There's often been some confusion where, you know, the cocktail is described and then presented as though that is Nyaupe, which is not the case. So I think Angela perhaps might be able to expand on that because there are also different places. If you're in Pretoria, for example, it's consumed a particular way. If you're in Ekurhuleni, it's consumed a different way as well. So I think Angela perhaps might be able to elaborate on that.
Sure, let's bring Angela into the conversation. Angela, you heard my question about Nyaupe and the composition of the drug and really trying to understand its highly addictive nature and characteristic? Mm. Where does that come from? I know, so U Nation has explained, Uguti, it's a low-grade, you know, form of heroin, but it's mixed with all sorts of other substances. So perhaps if you could just talk us through that.
So Nyape is heroin. It is an opiate. Opiates in general have are very strong. They're a painkiller, very strong painkiller that a lot of people use to, you know, when they are in hospital or something to that extent. And of course, in South Africa and actually all across the world, people have started using opiates for recreational use, and sometimes they do become dependent on the substance as well. So in the case of Nyape, so the word Nyape is actually a Swahili word for white, in reference to like white heroin, the powder, the color of the heroin.
Okay.
And in general, when it's consumed in South Africa, it could be used by injection, snorting, chasing on foil, and then of course mixed in with marijuana and smoked as a cocktail. And a lot of the time, people, the myth is that the drug is called Nyape, but in actual fact, it's just heroin. So sometimes they will call the cocktail itself Nyape, but Nyape is referring to heroin. The mixture and how it's smoked is smoked as a joint, as a cocktail. Mm. And that's where a lot of confusion comes in. And I mean, people will mix in whatever they want to mix into the cocktail. There was always there's a lot of confusion in the sense of people assume that ARVs or other forms of medication are mixed in with the heroin, aka Nyape, but that's not necessarily the case. If someone who is using Nyape, you know, a person who uses drugs is using Nyape, he or she may decide to add ARVs or whichever, but that's usually after they've procured it.
So help me understand the addition of ARVs. Is this just a part of a creative process, or does it amplify the effect of the drug?
No, not at all, not at all. I mean, it's very rarely done, and the only reason I bring it up is because it's been a myth, and it's been something that's brought into conversation time and time again.
Okay.
And it's more to just clarify that when someone is purchasing Nyape, they're actually just purchasing heroin.
I see.
So it's not the combination. Whatever the people who are selling the substance decide to cut with, the Nyape is what they decide to cut with it. It's not necessarily going to be ARVs. It does not affect, it does not change. If anything, if someone is HIV positive who is using Nyape decides to mix their ARVs in, then they're doing themselves a favor because of the fact that they're actually taking their ARVs.
Their medication.
And for themselves. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, another very interesting aspect to Nyape that I came across when I was doing my own little digging is how it just robs a lot of these young kids of their lives, because they become, you know, almost like slaves to the drug. From the moment they wake up, it's all about the next fix. You know, they'll get their first hit in the morning, and once they've had their first hit, already they're starting to think about getting their next hit for the afternoon. And once that's been had, they're already starting to think about getting their next hit in the evening. And I want to play this very quick clip of two of such young kids who are drug addicts, Nyape addicts, just so that you can get a sense and idea of how much of their lives is just completely become slaves to this drug.
Before, when I started it, I smoked it only at school. At break time. But now, because of I'm not a scholar, I'm not doing anything. I work for it every day. When I woke up, I must go and get some. When I finish that one, I must go again and get some. Every time, I must work for it and get it.
You become a slave for it because it sticks in your brain that you have to work for it. You have to make sure that you smoke. If you don't smoke, which means you're going to suffer inside. So you have to work hard for it so that you can get it. no matter what. Actually, I don't like the person that I am. But describe myself as say I'm a junkie.
Sure. So I want to give Angela an opportunity just to respond to that. I mean, you can hear just how much of their lives, like I said, have become slaves to this drug. And this idea of working to get the next fix. I mean, we're also talking about individuals who are homeless, who are unemployed.
Exactly. Yeah.
So how do they feed this habit?
So I think we also have to look at, especially when we're discussing the dependence on the substance, when it comes to words like junkie, when it comes to words like addiction,
yeah.
when it comes to words that have so much stigma and attached to them in the first place,
yeah.
it's a perpetuation of the hopelessness cycle.
Okay.
It's a perpetuation of the I can't be anything but a person who is using the substance. I can't be anything but quote unquote a junkie. It's what media, it's what society is constantly telling people who use drugs, that you will never amount to much more than this. And that shows a huge break, a huge gap in our system as South Africa, you know, where we are marginalizing and alienating the people who need it the most. I mean, you even gave mention to it. A lot of the people who find themselves in these situations where they have become dependent, they are usually homeless, they are unemployed, they come from a background of trauma, as brought up earlier, and all of those elements are ignored, and all that society looks at is the fact that they're using this substance.
Mm.
And that we have to start moving away from looking at a person who uses drugs, and we need to start looking at what's going on behind the scenes. You know, what is happening with this person as an individual? What
sure.
is their home situation like? Where did they come from? Where are they going? What are their dreams? Because the truth of the matter is, people who use drugs are still humans.
Mm.
We are still humans, no matter what, whether we drink alcohol, whether we smoke heroin, whether we inject meth, nonetheless, we are still human beings. And the substance we're putting into our bodies shouldn't be the focal point. What should be the focal point is, how can I support someone who is in a position, no matter what they choose to do? And for example, if this person is homeless, what can I do to support them so that they can build their lives up from that? Because
sure.
the honest truth is that anyone who becomes dependent or tries to escape with a substance or with any other form, let's say, for example, food or whichever, a lot of the times they get alienated for it instead of supported. And it comes back, I mean, we in the field of harm reduction in South Africa, we speak a lot about the support, to support, don't punish. It's an incredible campaign all across the world where we say exactly that. We support the community, don't punish.
Okay.
We speak about harm reduction, which is reducing the harm
okay.
to the community who chooses to use drugs.
Right.
We can't just look at it as the person uses drugs. We need to look
sure.
beyond them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So we have Ubandile and Umabaso who would like to join in on the conversation, and Anonymous as well, who would like to share their story. So I would like both Angela and Nation to just hold on to the line, listen to our contributors, and then we'll continue the conversation from there. Let's go to Ubandile. Ubandile, hi.
Ah, unjani aphelele.
Ntokozo, Bandile, Ntokozo.
Oh, sorry, Ntokozo, unjani?
Ngiyaphila, unjani?
Eh, bheka man. Yazi, masithi siyabheka, kunokuthi lihle izinga labantu ababhema inyawo, i-state la increase, ne?
Yeah.
So, mina ngiyamangala ukuthi eParliament kuza kanjani bangayazi. Ngoba ungabheka, ngichallenge anybody ukuthi you must come forward or she must come forward asitele ukuthi kunestrata esi-1 asaziyo any township esinganamuntu obheme nyawuphi. Umuntu owaziyo ukuthi kunestrata esaziyo in any township esinganamuntu obheme nyawuphi asitele. Ngoba in each and every street everywhere.
Mm.
kunabantu ababhema inyawo phe abasha abazelayo phezulu abanye bathi into ofuka ukuthi sihehle siyakhuphuka.
Sure.
Amafamily ahlala khi iminyango ngamagrilli abantwana abala kulezo zindlu abasangena abashana yonke lento le. Kusho ukuthi le problem esinayo angazi mina ifuna bani kanjani ngoba uyabona the present government ihlulekile.
Ngisho njalo. Sure. Okay, ngiyabonga Bandile. Mabasa, hi.
Hello, dumela okay.
Ke teng okay?
Eh, problem here is too huge.
Mm.
You see this thing here in Yaupe. If you bulela uzanga waba close to the action, you will think people ba sugela bath. I've got a brother from my wife's side. He's addicted. Wana ba ngi phone wena ka maraba starta. Ke fela ke khona go mona and then so that we can really be sure that he is still alive.
Mm.
It's quite sometimes I moan.
Mm.
But then now eba mo fatshala jaro ya sekolong o disappearile. Re feli jaro mo trader ona mo mara ba start. So the issue ke putshang why intelligence e palla go trader dilo tsa mofuto mara ordinary person wa se a want trainelwa for dilo tsa mofuto a gona o e bona.
Got it.
And it's painful because even if you offer an advice, the government is not in void. It's absent. It's like we don't have any government anymore.
Mm.
Because according to my suggestion, this people are addicted already. Because we are going to survive a bus nayon. Why is our government going to be a way forward? It's a creative place that is going to be in the life of the establishment that is going to be in the life.
Got it.
And then once ba go pana this addicted young boys and girls most starting ba collect ba ba bia establishment tsa mfuto ba hire specialized doctor ba ba tlo gona go observe di nyao petse ba ba trainu la madi ba analyze gore madi a contaminated le ke and ba tlo gona go kra le di answers gore how can we fight this thing.
Sure.
We won.
Okay.
In all the provinces, wari wedi lo tsa go tshwanetsa mofuto. Maybe re ka ba somewhere, but in the case of fighting it, my problem go we don't have government anymore.
All right, Mabasa. Thank you so much. Ne? Let's go to Anonymous. Hi.
Hi, Ntokozo, unjani?
Ngiyaphila, kunjani?
Ah, all right, man.
Mm.
Ntokozo, mina I'm phoning as a very sad cat. Parent. I've got kids that are still growing up. When I look at what is happening, I'm so disturbed.
Yeah.
I'm working in Sunnyside. Just in front of Sunny Park, there's a new building there for students. Because of those kids, I may say, if I can say 99, I'll be lying, 100% of them are smoking. They go outside the building. I think maybe inside they're not allowed to smoke because it's still new. The rules are still tight. But I believe going forward, that place will be the street of brown. They go outside of the building. They smoke. When you're supposed to, where I'm working, it's just next door. You need to let them move so that you can eat. They are not even afraid. They're just smoking in front of us. Whether you are an adult, they don't care. They're smoking. When you get out of the building, it's smelling marijuana. You can smell that it's mixed with something. It's they are just smoking in the morning, during the day, even now.
Okay.
You'll find them hanging around there smoking.
Yeah.
You know, they're just mixing in front of us. They don't care.
Yeah.
The other one that disturbed me is one day I saw the other one. Small kids. I'm talking about kids that are, when I look at them, they're just from matric. Small kids. I saw this other one. I think the guy who was dropping that child, it's just a Madala, a white guy. There's now prostitute because they need money. You can see what is happening. I feel so sad when the parents come there during school holidays, when they come in to fetch them. When I look at the parents, I cry inside.
Okay.
I'm so disturbed.
All right, Anonymous. Thank you so much for that. You know, I do want to... just caution against stigmatizing kids who are addicted to nyaope, or youth, or individuals, adults who are addicted to nyaope, because I think you heard from Angela the stories, you know, they vary and they're a lot more nuanced and a lot more complicated than we would like to think and perhaps we would like to entertain as a society. So I think this conversation is one where we all of us, I'm hoping, will get enlightened to understand what the path to addiction looks like so that we are wary and we are aware of the signs that perhaps we need to look out for. While at the same time, getting the information that we want, you know, getting the information and getting answers to some of the questions that have been asked, like umabaza, like what can we do to try and curb the scourge of drug use and nyaupe abuse in our communities, in our societies, and in our streets. But I do want to give our two guests an opportunity to respond to all of your calls. So I'm going to just ask them to take a quick breather now. We're getting really close to our news headlines. And when we come back, we're going to talk about all of those aspects, you know, how these kids are, you know, the life of crime that they have to take on in order to feed and to sustain this new addiction and this new habit, this new life habit that they have. And, you know, questions around, you know, government, what's government doing? Are there policies, plans put in place that perhaps we're just not aware of that our two guests can probably enlighten us towards so that we have an understanding of this idea of having an absent government? Maybe we're just not aware of what they're trying to do. And of course, this idea of rehab centers, how do they work, especially when you're trying to assist someone trying to get clean who's addicted to nyaupe? What is the best way to assist an individual like that? It's 2:30. Let's get your latest in Power News headlines with Nompo Melelo Ngobeni. We'll continue with the conversation after those news headlines. And of course, the lines are always open to you. The number to dial is 0861987000. We'll continue to take your calls and your questions.
Tackling the challenges of our time, one conversation at a time. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
All right, 27 minutes to the top of the hour. I want to give Nation an opportunity to speak to this issue of that was raised by Anonymous. Some of these young adults who are starting to get into a life of prostitution to try and, like I said, sustain their drug use and their drug abuse. And it's something that came up even in my own reading, this idea of this life of being a slave to this drug where you wake up in the morning and all that you do is working towards getting your next fix. And a lot of these kids are getting to a life of crime. They're getting to a life of prostitution as they try to keep up with the fix and the obviously the frequency with which they need to feed their cravings.
So, I mean, the monotony is definitely something that stood out. It's pretty much doing the same thing, and it's sort of, you know, cyclical smoking. You wake up at 8 and you immediately have to go ukhereze. By 12 o'clock, you've got the same craving, so you need to go ukhereze before that craving even hits. There was a lot of discourse amongst the men around unemployment as well as rehab enrollment delays when some of them were saying that they do want to quit. And I mean, something else that came up was a lot of the dialogue around community and family and the lack of trust. So I hear a lot of callers as well mentioning the lack of trust as well as just how pervasive this drug consumption is. Mm. At the end of the day, they are still, we do need to humanize these young men and women who are using this drug. Yeah. Mpiwe, for example, who I mentioned in the story, wants to be a scriptwriter. Ubongani wants to be a policeman. Uspiwe wants to be a lawyer. So they do still have dreams. And, you know, as soon as we start stigmatizing them, that sort of does stifle, you know, the advancements that they would make towards becoming better versions of themselves, which you can see is a strong desire amongst most of them.
I wonder if the stigmatization isn't a direct result of the kind of the ignorance that I think people perhaps have when it comes to how the drug works, how it operates, because I get the sense that there are a lot of frustrated parents, a lot of frustrated adults who have to contend with, you know, nyaupe, young men and women who are addicted to nyaupe. And I think the natural kind of response or impulse is to, you know, be repulsed, to be angered, to be frustrated. But I think it's the natural response because there is a lack of understanding of what's happening, what's at play, how these kids are even getting introduced to this life of addiction. Is that something that you perhaps have seen come up? Or maybe we can bring this question to Angela.
Absolutely. I can go ahead before Angela, sure. Perhaps. Just on the strained relationships, as you mentioned, with the parents, who most of the time don't understand how difficult it is to quit the drug. And I mean, their frustrations are absolutely valid. Mm. I think, you know, when arguments come up around whether Nyaube should be legalized, those are sort of problematic. You know, those add to sort of steering the currency a little bit into murky waters, because if you are at the receiving end, for example, of somebody who has a Nyaube addiction and then maybe commits a sort of crime, or if you are living with someone who is addicted to Nyaube, that might not be something that you're open to discussing. You're maybe looking for better interventions from the government, as mentioned. And I mean, the fact that Nyaube was only classified as illegal as late as 2014, and people are calling for it to be legalized, is, you know, it's a bit of an issue. So I do think that there needs to be more advancements around education.
Angela, what would you say to this idea of issuing a far more public campaign so that people are a lot more educated on the ins and outs of Nyaube addiction and, of course, the difficulties around quitting and getting clean, so that we can, as a society, have a better understanding of how the drug works? Because, like I said, I do get the sense that the natural impulse to repulsion and anger and frustration, which, as Nation explained, if you're on the receiving end of someone's addiction, frustration is part and parcel. But I think understanding also goes a long way in terms of helping people to extend a little bit more generosity.
I just want to address the one comment that was also brought up around decriminalization. Now,
sure.
A lot of the information that I discuss and a lot of the information based around harm reduction is all evidence-based. And we look at other countries like Portugal, we look at countries like Amsterdam, where they have decriminalized drug use, because it's not the elements, it's not the fact of if we decriminalize drug use, people will use more drugs. That's not the case, actually, and it's been proven. If anything, when we decriminalize people who use drugs, we take away the criminal record element. That's just one element we take away, because the truth is that people who use drugs are the sons and daughters, the mothers and fathers that are sleeping on the side of the street and who are hustling or Zilla or whichever the case may be daily to get their substance. They didn't just end up there overnight. They ended up there through a process. It's not an immediate thing. It doesn't happen overnight. There are things that happen to them, whether it is they were arrested or they were caught in school and kicked out of school and couldn't finish school because they were smoking, let's say, marijuana. And they experienced trauma. They experienced trauma
through
stigmatization. And what did they do? They fell somewhere or they leaned on something that provided them a sense of comfort, that did not judge them, that did not shun them, and that was a substance. And as a result, people will lean more towards aspects and elements that bring them comfort rather than additional trauma, including family who alienate them, or who a lot of the people that I work with and people that I engage with, they alienate themselves as well because they don't want to hurt their family. And I think that's also something we need to remember. Like I said it earlier, well, people who use drugs are also people, you know, and they are moms and brothers and daughters and so forth. And they don't want to hurt their family, so they leave.
Okay.
They leave to go sleep on the street. They leave Sochum. They come live in CBD because at least that way they don't have to worry about hurting their mom. And it is true what Bassa said as well around the government and the policies that are involved, because it is a problem.
Sure.
You know, it's causing more harm than good. Sending someone to rehab, I mean, you know, Nation brought it up in her article as well, that people are being chained to beds and to walls and made to live through withdrawal. It is one of the worst experiences that a person can go through in their life.
Sure. All right. So we're going to take a couple of more calls. And hear what Stuart from Oakdene wants to say. Hi, Stuart.
Hello.
Yes. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Good day to yourself, Ntokozo, and the guests. So 2 points from me.
Mm.
2 points. I'm gonna be quick. So one is, I think your guests, they are actually looking at. I mean, if you look at GDP capita of Portugal and the living standard of those areas.
Stuart, we can't hear you. Please speak into your mouthpiece.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that the living standard measure of Portugal, where the studies were conducted, in comparison with issues in Soshanguve, issues in like Sebokeng. I've got a brother of mine, and the only thing that saved me, right, yeah, my young brother, it's prison. When he actually robbed, it's prison. So I think your guest must do herself a favor. Go and live with a family that's got a Nyaupe person and actually sleep there and have a qualitative research in a sense that you understand the pain. Because not only the Nyaupe person is suffering here, also the family, the mothers, which are vulnerable, that are suffering. So now, this issue that we cannot, treat it with good hands.
Sure.
So we need to be take a hard line. You know, you need to be. I was in Italy. In Italy, my friend, they have soldiers, not even police, soldiers at airports like Linate. They have soldiers in areas where tourists are. It's high time, I think, police. It's high time we station soldiers in Pretoria, where, you know, the buildings where the students are at, because the police system has collapsed. Station soldiers where to the hardcore in Sebokeng there, where Nyaupe brothers. We need to sort out that problem. Let us not nurse this thing. Your guests there, they talk of nursing this thing, decriminalizing it. Oh, I don't know what are we going to breed with 27% unemployed, which is about 14 million of South Africans, and you're just leaving them to
right,
now. They're going to attack the very same guests that are.
Heaven. Okay, Stuart. All right, you've made your point. Let's not escalate the matter. I want to give my two guests an opportunity to give their parting shots because we have come to the end of this conversation. Let's start with you, Nation. Just your parting shot in terms of everything that we managed to discuss concerning the subject of Nyaupe.
So I think Nyaupe speaks to more of a structural problem more than anything. And because of the lack of the state-run facility, it means basically that the few NGOs that are operating are sourced to try and sort out these issues. The problem remains pervasive, though, because of the neglect in public policy and the lack of what seems to be a concrete plan. For example, in Minister Lindiwe Zulu's social development budget speech, she basically mentioned Nyaupe briefly towards the end, and it was just an appeal for everyone to work together, you know. And we need to be a little bit more, you know, hard-lined than that when it comes to our response. On decriminalization, I'm not so sure if South Africa has the capacity to regulate Nyaupe. I think we need to move towards more like temptation-free spaces. If we can get things like that right, we, you know, need to make sure that rehabs are actually functioning, because before we can say that we need to start doing things like that. So, you know, quitting already is difficult on its own, and then you come back to the same environment, not to mention this ease of access and the strong addictive nature of this drug. As we've mentioned, the unfavorable social environmental conditions that promote the initial use and the difficulty in quitting, I think that it just makes it 10 times more difficult to quit and to even try and bring about the argument of trying to legislate it. I think it's also about psychological readiness and aftercare services and shelters and therapy even afterwards. I don't think it's a criminal issue or a simple hospitalization issue. There's various stakeholders that need to get involved, and I definitely think that there needs to be more work done. I do think we've come a very, very long way, but I think we have a long way to go as well.
Sure. Angela?
I agree as well. I understand the protest, and I mean, a lot of the times people automatically assume that when we speak from a book. And the truth of the matter is, I've lived there, I've experienced that, I've been there, and I speak from that sense of hard attacking someone and
putting, coming from a space of war, coming from a space of fight, we want to, as South Africans, we don't want to fight.
Mm.
We don't want to fight against people. You know, the concept of the war on drugs is actually a war on people, and it's a war on brothers and sisters and mothers and uncles. And why are we killing our people? Why are we letting our people suffer? And I can agree with Nation in the sense of we should be looking at education, and we should be looking at effective rehabilitation centers and systems such as opiate substitution therapy as a maintenance program rather than just a detox program. But we also need to be looking at other elements, because everything, it's not a one-size-fits-all when
sure.
it comes to this challenge. It is something that there are multiple facets that need to be addressed from the current drug policies, which are warped and which are merely an additional tool to attack and damage the lives of people who use drugs, to educating our community and how we can start. And my suggestion moving forward, and speaking from my lived experience as well as my evidence-based research, is that we, as each other, as human beings, as South Africans, we need to respect and love and be compassionate rather than punishing people who are already vulnerable, who are already exploited, and who are resorting to behaviors not only to get high or whichever the case is, but remember, people also need to eat. People also need a blanket.
Understood.
And this is the case, is that it's automatically assumed that the drugs is the drive, but survival is the drive, and we need to adapt our systems so that survival isn't the primary focus, but rather health is.
All right. I want to thank both my guests for joining us for this very important conversation on Nyaupe. And I hope we can understand the perspective, certainly, that was stressed in this conversation, this idea of moving away from a war on drugs approach and wanting to punish those who are addicts, and start being a little more solution oriented and a little more willing to help and assist those who find themselves addicted to drugs. Because for a lot of them, it ends very sadly. It ends in death. In the case of Ubandile, if I'm not mistaken, or someone else had called in, he said that his brother was only able to really get rid of the drug once he was arrested. And I mean, these are the prospects we're talking about here: death or arrest. And so there has to be more that we can do collectively as a society to assist those who find themselves entrapped in a life of addiction, in a life of living with Nyaupe.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.